going, Representative Norton, House File 72. And Representative Norton moves House File 72 be recommended to pass. And do we have to go to finance or go right to taxes?
Taxes, please, sir.
And we refer to the tax committee. Representative Norton.
Thank you very much. I have today before you a bill on lifelong learning accounts, which are employer-matched portable individual accounts that will finance employee education and training. I think I would say I'm offering this because we often see it in the public good to fund education for kids, but for the private good, often for adults. And I would say that isn't the case, and in the future, I think we need to change our mindset. We're facing a time in our economy and in our because of demographics in our state and our country that we have large amounts of seniors retiring, fewer young people coming into the workforce, and we're going to have to do something to assure that the people in the workforce are well prepared for the changing times, particularly in the high-tech industries that are changing before our eyes. This bill is one way to address this issue. We are asking that you consider the policy part of this. We'll take it to taxes, and that will be a very different fight. That you consider this particular bill that would allow employees with a match from their employers to set up an account for their personal education. So these are called LILA accounts. We did have a hearing in this committee last year. Margaret Anderson Kelleher and Eric Paulson co-sponsored the bill. It was given a hearing, and I think it kind of stopped there. This past summer, I went to a Women in Government conference. We discussed this issue. Actually, Minnesota was touted as being on the forefront. There are a couple other states that are also leading the way in this particular area. But Minnesota has led the way with individual development accounts and 529s already. This is asking you to support a similar type of initiative for adult workers and adult learners. One of the key characteristics of this particular account is that it's portable. It means the account stays with the employee and not with the company. There are pros and cons to this, as I'm sure you're thinking in your head right now as I say those words. The accounts are also broad in scope, and they're not limited to a particular type of training, but allow the individual to retrain for a different job within the scope of the employment that they currently have, or if that employment is changing, they could use that education to retrain in a completely different area. It's very broad in that respect. LILA accounts in this particular bill are targeted toward industries where projected high occupational openings and industry growth will occur. We mentioned specifically healthcare, hospitality, and technology industries in this bill. Also, employees are allowed to make an informed choice. They choose what they need for their career goals. Certainly, that can be in cooperation with their employer if they so choose. For employers, LILA can help defray training and development costs or act as an affordable addition to an existing benefit package. And, of course, for the employees, the LILA account can help frontline employees obtain the training they need to advance their career. Those are just a couple broad statements about what LILA accounts will do. I'm hoping this committee will support the concept and the policy behind it. I might mention one of the questions that I had when I started this discussion is, if the employee puts money into an account, I asked the question, was it tax-free? It's not tax-free, it's pre-tax. But the earnings of that account, similar to a 529, are tax-free until the time that the money is taken out and if it's closed, perhaps at a later time in their life and not used for its intended purposes. And you'll see in the bill there are withdrawal penalties for such subtraction, such withdrawal. A couple of the other points you might want to note, the lifelong learning account tax credit, which I know this isn't a finance committee, but as the bill is currently written, the maximum credit for the taxable year is $1,000 for a married couple or and $500 on the other returns. And the business also, and that is another place in the bill, the business is also given a tax credit, so both the employee and the employer will benefit from this particular account. With that, I have help here to cover any questions that you might have, as I am not a tax expert. I do know that this is going to mirror in many ways the 529, which fall under deed, and this will as well, which is why it's before this committee. I've spoken with them, and they didn't have any issues with the bill at that time.
Welcome.
Thank you, members. My name is Amy Brennigan, Office on the Economic Status of Women here at the Legislature. We just have been doing some research and some information on this bill simply because in other states where LILAs exist, many of the account holders are women. So we've helped Representative Norton and Senator Sheeran gather some of the research and the information and are available to answer, to help answer questions that you might have about the bill.
Representative Norton, I think I had the wrong motion made for you. I think you have to go back to finance first, full finance committee, and then go from there to taxes. So we'll adjust that motion then at the end. Representative Norton, do you have any idea? I remember this was a pretty spendy bill last year. Do you have an idea of the total tax implications?
We do not yet have the fiscal note on it, but when it goes to taxes, one will be done, and we will have that before us. And Representative Winchelski has shared her concern with that, and we will deal with it in that committee.
So that was the route it took last year.
Yep.
And I guess my only other question is, you don't allow deeds to use any charge any administrative fees or anything on this bill, do you? That I can see.
I don't see anything in the bill that.
It's just a repository, I guess, of
yes.
the money, and you chose them because of the employee-employer training. Okay, questions, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Norton. I don't see it in a place, but this is not a mandate where businesses have to do this. It's just all voluntary. Okay.
It is optional, Mr. Chair, Representative. It's optional, voluntary.
Okay, thank you.
And in fact, if I could just continue, had I had a little bit more notice, and I didn't get this till I came in, IBM testified they do voluntary LILAs now. They don't get the tax credit benefit, but they do see it as a benefit for their employees. And so they have a matching situation in their company right now. It's not utilized heavily, and part of that is because it's not advertised heavily, and it's also not a statewide program. It's just their internal workings, and there's some interest in High-Tech Minnesota, or one of the high-tech companies, I may have the wrong name, that will come testify in tax committee, both of those, to talk a little bit about the particulars of their organizations and how this will benefit not only their employees, but them as well and other businesses in our state.
That was easily
no. Representative
Atkins. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton, this is actually something speaking of employers, this is something my law firm has engaged in, but we weren't able to capture the tax benefit from doing it. So I think it's a neat idea. I am a little concerned, this is, you know, further down the path in terms of the reception that you'll get on the tax committee. Is there a way to phase this in so that it maybe is more palatable? And I'm just questioning whether you've thought about that approach or if that is something that might be more acceptable to certain folks that might not like it so much right now.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Atkins. We have been working with TAIL, which is a nationwide organization on this, and they did have some suggestions, but if the dollar amount was frightening for people, and it's going to be tough to get a fiscal amount when it's voluntary, but they'll do their best, I'm sure, to help us out with that we could perhaps have at the beginning lower, for instance, the taxable year credit could be $500 rather than $1,000 at the beginning and $250 instead of $500, that we could make some of those changes to phase it in with a lesser fiscal note. And I think we would consider that as we move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Say, is there any limitation to the types of training or educational opportunities? Is there a state-approved list, or can the individual extend that wherever they want, so long as it meets the broad definition?
At this point, that's the case. Very broad.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also think this is a great bill. I think the nursing homes and the hospitals in my area are doing this today.
Yes.
I did it with a meat cutter years ago. I paid for their tuition into vocational school. I think it's good. I didn't get a tax credit either, though. I think it's a good feature.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Representative, if I might add, I think that this is a great benefit for low-income workers and frontline workers. They don't always get the training opportunities that middle-level and higher-level workers get.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, do you have any closing remarks you'd like to make, Representative Norton?
No, I thank you for your time, and I would appreciate your support.
Okay. Representative Norton renews her motion that House File 72 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance. New recommendation to be referred to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Passes.
Thank you.
Next we have Representative Davis. And the House File 1292. Okay, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, House File 1292 has to do with the city of Rushford. Rushford, I want to say in 2005 or 6 in there somewhere, received a grant in the bond, or received some bonding provisions here. If you look on the back of the bill, it was $600,000, a grant to the city of Rushford to acquire real property for the Institute of Nanotechnology. It's been sitting there for a few years now, and the money is still there. The money's sitting there, but because it was going to, it was basically going to the city of Rushford, but then it was for acquiring things for the basically for the private sector. It didn't meet the bonding test. So, as you know, many of you were here when Rushford had their very severe floods in August of 2007. And the people of Rushford are very grateful for the work of this legislature. But what we're looking at here is what we're looking at is their community center, the Ten Borg Center, was wiped out during the flood. And they would like the $600,000 to be moved over from the Institute of Nanotechnology to the community center project. And it would go through D. There are matching funds that are needed, and the city already has raised those matching funds, so this is a project that could start right away if the money can be switched over from the Institute of Nanotechnology to the community facility, which was wiped out during the flood.
Okay. If we need to have someone move your bill, Representative Reinert, would you move House File 1292 to be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance with a recommendation to be referred to Capital Investment?
So moved.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Murphy.
Representative Davis, could you describe for us where this community center would be?
Okay, it is it's the former Ten Borg Center, which when you're going downtown, go north. When you get downtown, go north to the stop sign, hang a right, and it's the second building on the left.
Next to
behind. What used to be the bakery, but now it's a restaurant.
Okay, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's located kind of kitty corner from what is the big brick building, which is a restaurant. If you were there for...
Yep.
It's located in the downtown, but not directly on Main Street, just a little bit off Main Street.
But Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, kitty corner and back one.
Representative Davis, could you tell me what happened to the Nanotechnology Center? Have they located somewhere?
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Poppy, actually it's up and going and functioning as we speak. What the Institute for Nanotechnology was, they're in place to spawn off small businesses in nanotechnology, and the first one is up and running right now. The Institute for Nanotechnology was to provide education, training, public safety awareness of this whole new emerging industry. And so they're up and running. It's just the way that this language was written, it couldn't be used for that purpose. And as I said, there's a match. They would have to match the $600,000. They already have that in place.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rufina.
Mr. Chair, and you know, to the committee and specifically to Representative Anderson, regarding you know our in-depth or prioritizing, and just you know, this is an example of a bill that should move along. But what I want to say is, next year, all the bills that we've referred this year that are maybe going to make a bonding bill. The only bills would be probably the Minsky vetoed list and the university's one project, I believe it was, and some HEPA money. You know, if there is a bonding bill, that's what's going to be in it. Then next year, in the way it's worked in the past, all those bills are going to come back here. And we'll have a second go-around look at them. And then we can prioritize, and we'll have 3 10-hour meetings if you want. And, you know, at that point, then we'll do it. But this year, we're moving them out here, and they'll be sitting, most of them, in capital bonding until next year when they'll be re-referred back to us, and then we'll look at them more in depth. And then you can prioritize them if you want. Representative, before I see my colleague raise her hand, is this a regional project, or what's state significance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, it's of international.
I think it is too.
Yeah. There's somebody there from Japan the other day. So. Just kidding.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rukavina, I appreciate you doing that. I think it just, I know I got an email here today that I just read from Representative Gugnia's Environment Finance Committee, and they had talked about how we were going to have a session here, I think just this week, talking about, you know, putting together our recommendations, so I'm glad that we will have an opportunity to look at these bills again, and I appreciate you dedicating that time to doing that, and we just want to spend more time with you, Representative Rukavina. That's
know.
What it's all about.
And this will be after our Christmas little Christmas.
Oh, excuse me.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Davids. I'm sorry I didn't get here for the start of your presentation. Are you just about done here and get to make comments on changing money from the biosciences to something else?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mahoney, I'm sorry you missed it. It was quite marvelous.
I'm sure.
That being said, what was your question again?
Moving money from biosciences and nanotechnologies to what are you doing?
City Hall.
Pardon?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, what the situation here is the way this was written, we wanted it to go to the Institute for Nanotechnology that could spawn off future companies and jobs. And the Institute is up and going, and there is a company that is up and running in Rushford right now. The way this language was written in 2005 or 2006, whenever this was in the bonding bill, it was going to the city of Rushford, but it was going for a purpose that had too much private purpose in it, and so it didn't qualify for bond council. Bond council said it didn't qualify for bonding. So the city of Rushford has match money, so this would go through the deed program where it's a 50-50 match, and so they're basically ready to go right now with it.
And is it still going to go to the Institute of Nanotechnology?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, no.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, you know how I'm a bit protective of money going to technology, and so I'll follow the bill as it moves forward.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney. If there was any way, we've had some very brilliant minds working on this, mine not included, but some people a lot smarter than I am, tried to make this work, and it just kept hitting roadblocks.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Davids, is this a community that lost 90% of the businesses they had, retail businesses and businesses?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, that's right in that neighborhood. That's correct. It was a devastating flood in August of 2007.
I think they lost 70 out of 72 businesses in this community. So I think anything we can do to restore that business community, make that a town again, would be worthwhile.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to belabor the point, but I just wanted to offer Representative Davids the opportunity to also state that the Tendorf Center is a revenue-generating center, because if you, maybe not to a great deal, but if you, I know we've had family reunions there, so you can actually, so it is not just the community center that everybody feels good going to, but it also does bring some money back into the city.
That's correct.
Okay. Sure. Representative Reinert renews her motion that House File 1292 be recommended to pass and be referred to finance with a recommendation to be referred to capital investment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Representative Slocum. Representative Slocum, would you like to move your bill, House File 1042?
I would. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, this is a bill of international importance. It's part of, and I'm saying that tongue in cheek, and I'm not even getting a smile. Come on now. It's $4.6 million. We've been here before. We'd like a deed grant. This is part of a comprehensive plan for redevelopment in an area that needs it. And I have with me today Mike Eastling, who is the Director of Public Works from Richfield. He will be brief. I have briefed him on that critical point.
Chairman, members of the committee, I would just like to point out the location of this project, and that's really what drives the need for this project. There's been a great partnership between the state, the county, and the city to get the project advanced as far as it is, and I just want to outline that quickly. On this map, I show the city of Bloomington here on the bottom, and Richfield is in the middle here, this kind of purple area. The city of Minneapolis is to our north. I think it's particularly note the airport located immediately adjacent to the city of Richfield. Oh, one other thing I want to point out, and you may not be able to see it real well, there is a regional bikeway that connects the chain of lakes and connects down to Richfield and eventually to the river crossing at the new bridge. And I'm going to outline that path in just a second. What's shown on the map now is the runway, the new runway that was just put in here a few years ago. And that drove a change for it to put a new intersection here. And that intersection, when it was constructed, took out the frontage road that served the businesses in the area adjacent to that freeway there. When that came out, there was a need to put another road carrier through here. Today, there is a Home Depot and a Target and some other businesses in this area, all driven by the need to replace the single-family homes that were adjacent, less than a half mile away from the new runway. With this change now, with the redevelopment that's taken place here and the road construction, you can see that's in the light green. Now, the next phase of this project would be to get the single-family home properties that are located in pink here, get them relocated. And an important part of that project would be a road that serves both the commercial and the residential property that's shown in blue here. I think one of the other drivers for the project is that now today, this crossing into Minneapolis, that's Bloomington Avenue, comes down through a residential neighborhood with, and there would be a more than doubling in the amount of traffic to serve the commercial in this newly developed area. This road would divert that traffic off the residential area and down the new road over to the destination of the new development. And maybe with that, I can take questions.
Mr. Chair, sir, what's the total cost of the project? Are you matching this at least dollar for dollar?
The total cost of the roadway portion is the $4,632,000 that's identified in the bill. If I understood the question correctly.
Is there a local match to the bonding request is what I'm asking.
Oh, I'm sorry. The local match occurred in the first phase. We have expended just in the roadway improvements and what was needed for the right of way over $4.5 million. So there's an equal matching amount.
Okay.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today, I know we raised a large amount of transportation funding in the last legislative session, and my understanding is that a good share of that was to run through county and local governments in terms of state aid. Is any of that money available for this kind of a project? I'm just curious why this would be an economic development bonding request as compared to a local road construction project.
As Chairman, members of the committee, the city did use a significant portion of its municipal state aid and some county money on this first phase, and that's, I guess that would be the local contribution. The amount of increase just for the city of Richfield alone is less than $100,000, which would not so far on this. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Slocum renews her motion for House File 10, that House File 1042 be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance with a recommendation referred to Capital Investment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank
you. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd move that House File 1227 be recommended to pass and refer to full finance committee.
Okay. Go ahead.
And members, 1227 is a bill that the Department of Employment and Economic Development has brought forward to me to kind of fast track it so that we can then qualify for approximately $130+ million of extended unemployment insurance. So there's a number of things that we have to do in the bill in order to qualify for the federal stimulus package, but also there's a few other minor changes that we're making so that in the first part of the bill so that some Minnesotans, more Minnesotans can access money right away too, like we did with Representative Mahoney's bill earlier this session. So with that, members, I have and I should say that part of the stimulus package requires us to make some changes in order to get the money. So Mr. Lee Nelson is here from Deed. He'll explain the bill as quickly as possible so we can get on with the other bills behind us. And we do have an amendment that Representative Mahoney has that is one addition that we beg the committee's indulgence on putting in here. That is, since we're trying to get this money to our constituents as quickly as possible, we would allow them to go to school while they're collecting unemployment insurance, because it's just the whole economy and everything else. And that would be the only part, I believe, of this bill that would have an effective date that would be before August 2nd.
Representative Mahoney, do you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'd like to move the H1227A1 amendment, and I can speak to it now or after we adopt it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. excuse me, I was distracted for a second. President Mahoney would like to move the amendment. And what was the number of the amendment again?
It's the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment.
Sure.
Is there discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chairman, if I could explain it just a quick.
Yes, please.
Members of the committee, my House File 12, which is a reemployment assistance training bill and allows apprentices and others on unemployment to continue on at school or to become members of a, I'm trying to think of the class that they're put into, suitable for employment reemployment training. I can't find out where it's at. But anyhow, it allows apprentices and those on unemployment, it's reemployment assistance training, which means that if their job goes away or they can get a better job by going through some training, they can go to school. The other part to this amendment is, and that's on the first page, and then section 7, second page, the employment, starting on page 3.5, employment misconduct defined, clarifies and expands the language that allows someone, if they leave their job for reasons such as, well, it says here, regardless of conduct or consequences of applicant's mental illness or impairment, absence with a proper notice to employ in order to provide necessary care because of an illness, injury, disability, or immediate family member of the applicant. And it also addresses if someone is suffering from domestic abuse, they can leave their job and get unemployment. There is one other oral amendment that I have to make, members, and that's on page 4, line 11, where it says under the federal conformity, it starts the line on 411 at section 1 through 7, and I'd like to delete the number 7 and insert the number 10. I should have seen that earlier. And this is, again, federal conformity that makes it simpler for us to explain to the federal government what we're trying to do and accept that $130 million in incentive payments. And I'm sure I never explained these entirely right, but Mr. Nelson is here if I made really glaring errors.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Can we just vote on the amendment to the amendment first so we have that and it's in place? Okay, so the amendment was on page 4, line 11, to change the number 7 to number 10. Does everybody understand that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Thank you. That is now amended, so we're good. And now, Representative Rukavina,
do you have a comment? Members, Madam Chair, maybe I could just quickly say something that might just move this bill along very quickly with a brief explanation by Mr. Nelson. And that is that the Chamber and the AFL-CIO are kind of holding hands on this, and there's no, they don't have any opposition to the bill. And so I'm hoping we can just move it along to quickly. And so with that, Madam Chair, Mr. Nelson can explain quickly what we're doing.
I know we have a couple of questions first. I wanted to see if Representative Downey, I think you were overlooked, maybe. Did you have a question?
No, thank you.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
I'll wait until
then. Okay. Very good. Okay. So, Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, members, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program in Minnesota. This bill was brought forward in order for the Minnesota Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund to receive $130 million. In federal funds, which will help support that trust fund. I do want to point out why this bill is so technical in nature. The Department of Labor issued a memo on February 26th, which is 35 some pages long, implementing the federal law in this area, which was actually only a couple of paragraphs. They left a lot to the interpretation of the Secretary of Labor, and they issued those interpretations on February 26th. That's why there was an amendment, because the bill was originally drafted prior to February 26th. This bill is extremely technical. I can go through it by section, but it allows unemployment benefits, people who apply to use more recent wages to qualify for benefits. It's going to expand the number of people who qualify for benefits. It also expands if you quit your job when you may be able to collect. We add two additional exceptions to denial for quitting, which is if you're taking care of an ill family member or if you're quitting to move with your spouse whose job location was changed. I'll give an example of the last one. If Delta moves some people to Atlanta and their spouse has to quit their job, that spouse would be able to collect unemployment benefits under this particular provision. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll answer any questions.
All right. We still have the amendment that needs to get onto the bill. H2227A1. Representative Anderson, did you have a question before we put the amendment on? Then you can go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm looking at the amendment here, and it's the definition of the immediate family member. Was this part of the federal requirement as well to extend the, you know, they've got on here parents, son, daughter, grandson, or granddaughter?
go ahead, Mr. Nelson. You take that one.
Madam Chair, no. Representative Anderson, the Department of Labor issued their guidelines on that. This is a little more expansive than is asked for by the Department of Labor. Department of Labor limited it to minor children. After discussions internally in the department, they brought this bill to Representative Rukavina, and we had suggested that it be all children. The example is if somebody has a child and all of a sudden they're dying of cancer and your employer, you don't qualify for FMLA because your employer's not large enough. I would leave my job to take care of my daughter. Let's put it that way. And we felt that that was a good idea. It also would apply to grandchildren, and which is not part of the federal. And again, if my grandson needed me, I'd be there.
Madam Chair, so the federal Department of Labor said it should extend to minor children, but what we're doing here is we're extending it to parents, son and daughter of any age, grandson and granddaughter. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, yes. The Department of Labor simply sets the minimum. The legislature could decide anybody. You could make it, you could define immediate family members being anybody you please. But you can't go more narrow than the federal requirements.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And now, for this, then they get a benefit of $15? Per week as as being considered a dependent, or can you give me a little idea of what's considered a dependent and what does that mean?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, no, we did not do that option. You are allowed four options, and you have to have two of four options. Minnesota already has the option covering part-time workers, so that wasn't an issue. We put in some comfort language into the bill, but Minnesota already covers that, and we've done it for 20 years. What the administration's position would be is to pick up the option dealing with separating due to compelling family reasons. And we already have one of the three elements necessary for that, which deals with a person who separates from their employment because of domestic violence. So we already met one of the three requirements to get to compelling family reasons.
Madam Chair, if I could, for Representative Anderson, we have to pick two of the four to qualify for the second $86 million or $87 million approximately, Representative Anderson, and you'll be happy to know that I took the cheapest option for your employer. I hate to admit that publicly, but I did. And the little concerns you have about the grandparent and adding the grandparent, I think the whole cost of that whole option is about $500,000. Totally. So there really should be just we can move this bill along and get to the rest of our people.
Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the gist of my question is whether or not we're creating new definitions that didn't exist prior to the stimulus package that we will then have to live under going forward after the federal stimulus funding runs out. And I'm just noticing, for example, that certain criteria have changed from being necessary to will assist, such things as the applicant's mental illness or impairment not being not qualifying for misconduct. A number of provisions that talk about what's considered suitable employment and definitions of part-time versus full-time employment. And so it seems like we're changing some terms, I think, technically, just to make sure we can avail ourselves of the stimulus funds. Do those new terms and conditions then prevail after the stimulus funds end? Do they create any kind of a financial obligation that we might not be prepared to fund after the stimulus funds? And would you accept an amendment that would turn these changes back to where they were at the point that the stimulus funds expire, if that's the case?
Madam Chair, I'll let Mr. Nelson, but Representative Don, just let me say this. I had some concerns like you on the from the opposite side. Were we eliminating, you know, with these small changes? I was reassured that we weren't, that the AFL-CIO and the Chamber of Commerce were both supportive of these. It made a clarification. Really, it made their job easier for interpretation. And I don't think the cost because of this is ongoing, but maybe
Mr. Nelson
can address that.
Madam Chair, Representative Downing, first of all, again, this memo makes it very clear Department of Labor will not approve any legislation which is not permanent. So if you were to sunset or otherwise not make it a permanent change in law, they would not accept it and they would not qualify. Second of all, Representative Downing, all of the changes in this bill, our estimate is a little over $1 million a year in increased benefit costs. All of the changes. And for that change of $1 million a year, we will get one-time money of $130 million. And some very, very minor changes. To give you a perspective, Representative, we will pay, the latest estimate I just got yesterday is $1.5 billion. In unemployment, in regular state unemployment benefits this year, we could pay $500 million additional in federal extension. We will pay $2 billion in unemployment benefits to Minnesotans this year, and this bill represents maybe a $1 million increase.
All right. Representative Defund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nelson, I guess I'm curious, can you give me an idea what employers and employees spend now in litigation regarding misconduct cases?
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, there are last year in 2008 45,000 Minnesotans applied for unemployment benefits who were discharged from their jobs. They weren't laid off, they were discharged. And the department has to determine whether they were discharged for misconduct. The department determined two-thirds of those individuals discharged were not misconduct. One-third, meaning 15,000, were discharged for misconduct. Appeals in that area represent over 10,000 a year. Yes, it's an issue. It's a substantial issue. What is misconduct? But it has always been an issue. It has been an issue since the beginning of the program. And the difficulty with misconduct is it varies depending upon the nature of the job and the nature of the employer. What you expect out of a physician is a whole lot different than you're going to expect out of an unskilled factory worker. And so the expectations vary, and that's why you have the standards of behavior the employer has a right to reasonably expect of the employee. The nature of the employer and the nature of the employee's job vary. And so, yes, it's very difficult, and it is a litigated issue. I have to admit to you, it's the most litigated issue by far, but I don't know how to get around it, and it is litigated the most in every single state in the nation.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that kind of is the concern I'm coming from, because it seems like some of the changes here are vague enough so they're going to open the door for a lot more misunderstanding. And I just wonder if there couldn't be a tighter way to write some of these things. I'm thinking particularly of page 3, line 3.22, number 8 there. Absence with proper notice to an employer in order to provide necessary care because of illness, injury, or disability of an immediate family member. What is necessary care? I mean, if your daughter was diagnosed with the terminal cancer, is that the definition? Or is it just an employer's need to stay home and take care of their kid or their spouse? Or I just think there's some kind of vague things in here that I don't disagree with at all in the context, but it seems like we already have an area that's heavily litigated, and we're going to put more gray into that. That concerns me a little.
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, those are word for word out of federal law. And the Department of Labor has issued, again, 35 pages on trying to describe a number of those things, including necessary care. They describe it in a long paragraph, which would cover about a page. And that's why we put Section 11 of the amendment into the bill, which basically says we're adopting this in and we will use the federal definition. Otherwise, you're going to run afoul of the Department of Labor saying we don't meet the stimulus money. Unfortunately, we kind of have to use the vague terms that the Department of or that Congress has enacted in order to meet the federal stimulus. It is not going to make things easier. In our estimation of the number of people who would come up under that situation involve a few dozen a year. It doesn't represent a substantial problem of people who are actually fired from their jobs. They've called in, told their employer, I can't be there because my child is sick, and the employer says, you're fired. We don't see that situation. Most employers are much more flexible than that. A number of employees are covered under FMLA, so it's not an issue. But it does in fact occur, we could write it tighter, but then we will run afoul of the federal law, which uses those very terms. It's a dilemma, but it's minor. And again, to get the $130 million, the administration's position is it's worth it for the number of times that particular issue would be litigated.
Members, I think, as I said, the bill has been worked on by both the business community, the labor community. I've got some concerns, too, but Representative Easton, I can assure you I have tried to act like an intelligent district.
I just wanted to announce that H1227A1 was previously adopted, so it is so the bill is amended, so it has been all amended, but I know that Representative Nornes has the question, and then Representative Mahoney, and then perhaps we'll be able to move this on. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question with the changes that I see here, and I understand the Chamber and everybody seems to be on board, but with the employers, I think, paying a rate based on their history of unemployment, I'm interested in what the effect or impact would be on our employers in the state of Minnesota when we kind of loosen up the... Am I on the wrong track?
It's kind
of stimulus money, but in the long run, I'm wondering what the impact might be on our employers as far as their unemployment rates are concerned.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norris, again, it is going to expand benefits by just over $1 million a year, spread across the whole system. $1 million to $2 million. $2 million is the absolute maximum, probably closer to $1 million a year. But for that, the trust fund, and thus ultimately, which helps keep employer taxes low, because the trust fund has more money, employers don't have to replenish it to the tune of $130 million. So that's why the administration went forward. And again, as Representative Rukavina has indicated, these are the least expensive options available to us. We don't have a lot of choice. If stimulus, we can make different choices. That's up to the legislature. But those would be much, much more expensive, and that's much more costly on employers. But you're looking at a cost just over $1 million and an absolute maximum of $2 million per year.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if we could get Brad Leto, Tom Hesse, a picture of the three of them holding hands with Rukavina and Mr. Antel in the background.
It might show up on a brochure someday.
I want it for my walk.
I believe that we're ready. Representative Rukavina renews his motion that House File 1227 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion prevails. We will do Representative Angeles, if you want to come forward with your bill, please. I think it's House File 242.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. 242 is a capital improvement request
for a community of 1,000 people located on the western Mesabi of the Great Iron Range. And it is a request that would be matched dollar for dollar with non-state sources if it is works its way through the process. It's for the redevelopment of the downtown commercial area of the city of Coleraine. And it is consistent with what we call the rebirth of the Western Mesabi because of the eventual construction and redevelopment of our taconite resources along the Western Mesabi in Itasca County. I stand for questions.
Representative Reinert moves House Bill 242 be recommended to pass, and we refer to finance and then capital, bonding finance. Okay, any questions? Not. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative, Representative Falk, are you around here?
Purcell.
Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell, let's see. Representative Obermuller, you want to move the House file? 1292 be.
No,
oh, excuse me. I'm 1130 be recommended to pass, and we refer to finance and capital bonding finance. Go ahead, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. What I have here is a capital improvement bill for some upgrades to buildings, get things up to code in several buildings. Calling it an asset preservation bill. Of course, we'll keep people to work here, get people to work. That's the bill in a nutshell. Respond to any questions.
Representative Purcell is this, where is this on the Minsky list? And it looks like it's a lot of HEPRA dollars. So are they, where is this now on the Minsky, the priority list, you know?
Can't tell you the number.
Okay.
We're trying to move it through here.
Oh, it is. It's included in their HEPA request from what I've been told, so it looks like you might get a lot of this funding. If we get a HEPA bill, it'll probably accomplish this whole thing, so I'd be told by staff. And Mr. Janicich is nodding that basically you're covered, but you're a good representative. You've covered it twice. So, Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this relates to the point you're just making, but I'm wondering why this is being moved separately from the normal Minsky process and whether there's any reason for doing so.
Representative Reinert, I was taught early on by Representative Kahn and Representative Osta that you put your stuff in as many bills as possible to make sure it finally ends up being passed in the law at the end. So I don't know who taught Purcell that, but he learned quick. He's a quick learner, evidently.
I thank the chairman for that.
No further questions. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Purcell. We'll take Representative Kiffmeyer next because she's got a number of looks like students and parents here. Representative Kiffmeyer, welcome to the committee. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, in honor of this being my first time as under your committee, I did bring cookies. These are homemade cowboy cookies, special for you.
Well, thank you. If you know, you would have had a better hearing in here if they had been made to look like hockey pucks. But we'll accept them as is.
As long as they don't taste like them.
Welcome.
Don't eat the big black one, man.
A black pill. Go ahead. We'll have Representative Anderson. Would you like to move House File 1319? We recommended to pass, and we refer to finance and then capital bonding finance. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Glad to be here today. And we have a wonderful presentation today. I'd like to welcome all of our Big Lake students that are here today. Come on, stand up. Get a little stretched there. You've been sitting for a while. And they've been traveling today. They were, they've been here, and we really appreciate, okay, good exercise there. Thank you for being here, good hockey fans, and Representative Rukavina, I'm sure that's something that values you as well. So we're just kind of getting settled here. Also, I have with me today at the testimony table, I have the mayor of Big Lake, Lori Campa. I have Mr. Chris Dolphus, who is the president of the Becker Big Lake Ice Association, and also have a student here who will introduce himself here shortly. And Mr. Chairman and members, this is a regional hockey that arena. Our area is a huge, large, growing area, been hit very hard by the economic times, and this particular arena will bring jobs to the area, bring other derivatives of economic development, and will be an important resource here for our students, and also enable us to have a girls' hockey team in the future as well. So we're excited for what our all of our teams have done, but we're eager to expand that, and as well as the economic positioning that this will do for our area as well. At this time, I do have Mayor Campbell would like to just say a few words, and then we'll also go into our just brief presentation.
That's Mayor, welcome. Chairman. Just identify yourself, all of you, when you start talking. For the
Good time. Afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Lori Campa, and I am the mayor of Big Lake. We're here today to ask for your support in this bill for our regional ice arena. Big Lake has been hit really hard economically, as well as, I'm sure, many other communities. But this particular arena, the land that's already been purchased for it, is in a growing area. It was growing before the economy turned, but this arena would be a very vital heartbeat to keeping that area alive. Not only would it create jobs in during the construction of it, but it would also become a very, very vital economic stimulus, actually, for our whole area, as it would continue to generate income beyond into the communities. The piece of land sits between Big Lake and Elk River. And we feel that it would be very beneficial for all the communities around. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. Any questions for the mayor? The cookies are pretty good, by the way.
Well, of course, Mr. Chairman.
Sir, you want to go ahead?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Chris Dolphus, and I'm the president of the Becker Big Lake Ice Association. Does everyone have a handout? Okay. So we'll just go through this, and Becker Big Lake Ice Association is a nonprofit organization dedicated to building a regional ice arena in the Big Lake area. The Ice Association currently owns 5 acres of land on State Highway 10 in Big Lake. We are here today to request state funding for the Big Lake Regional Ice Arena. The project summary is a $3 million sheet of ice owned by the City of Big Lake and will be operated by the Ice Association. Will be used by local and regional organizations for hockey, figure skating, indoor civic and community events, craft and car shows, indoor soccer, lacrosse, and the list goes on. There's many activities that can be held in this facility. The proposed site is right along Highway 10 in Big Lake, and it is eventually designed for a second sheet of ice. It's a project design. This is what the interior of the arena will look like. Local government support that we currently have, the City of Big Lake, Big Lake Township, the Big Lake School Board, Orrock Township, and Sherburne County. How we're going to finance this arena? $1.375 million via a city or county bond, and that will be paid for via tax abatement and arena revenue. The other part of the financing would be $1.125 million in legacy grant money. And legacy grant money would be materials that are used in the arena that are recycled materials, i.e. concrete, crushed concrete, rubberized materials, anything that's reused from another facility. You can get dasher boards from another facility, etc. The goal is to minimize materials that are going into the landfill. So this is a county-sponsored grant, and we have the Township of Orrock and the City of Big Lake sponsoring those grants. The financing from the state aspect is the final piece of pie that we've been looking for. via HF 1319 and on the Senate side FF 1000. Appropriation of funds for the Big Lake Regional Ice Arena ensures success of the financial plan. The next page has a breakdown of all the entities and what their contributions would be. And the timeline for us, with approval of everything, we begin construction in June of this year and hopefully have the doors open for the 2009-10 season starting in November. There are many reasons to support this arena. The positive economic impact on Big Lake and regional commerce. In the short term, the arena construction will involve an estimated 41,000 work hours for a six-month time frame. The construction workers will utilize area restaurants, stores, gas stations, etc. Long term, the arena will continue to stimulate the local economy via hockey games, tournaments, and other events. It will also promote future commercial development in the community. In summary, this project benefits the local economy in the short and long term through job creation and utilization of local businesses. The arena provides a much-needed ice for youth and high school hockey programs. I'd like to thank you for your time and consideration, and before we have questions and answers, I'd like to have Matt Green, who is one of our high school hockey players, speak briefly.
Matt, welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the tape. We're happy to have you. Don't be nervous.
Hi. Hello, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Matt Green. I'm a member of Big Lake High School, junior. I play for the varsity hockey team. Over the years, we've been slowly shrinking. 3 years ago.
I have too, Mr. Green.
Yeah, we've had a varsity and a JV team, but we've had mixed players to play between both. This year, we only had a varsity team due to our numbers. We've been shrinking due to our practice time. No one wants to really come out, and it's really taking a toll on some of the players. Our usual practice times are from 10:15 at night to 11:45. That's when we get done. We usually get home and get to bed between 1 or 2 in the morning. Most players are, we have to wake up around 6, go to school at 7:30. Really affects them with their ability to focus in class. As you can tell.
You're doing good.
Could end up like you, Mr. Chair.
That's pretty much it.
Well, you know, members, I mean, this is a good indication of, you know, when things aren't statewide or maybe even regional, but the importance it is to the community and the area around that community. And I understand, Matt, because I've had the same problems with you know, the young kids having to practice at 6:30 in the morning and the varsity team practicing late at night, and then when you get girls hockey in the mix, it can be a real stress on both the students' you know, educational life and also on their family life. So I support your project. I don't know what kind of a bonding bill that we're going to have, Mayor, and everyone the size of it, but we'll see what we can do to help you all. Coming from rural Minnesota, especially the range, how many of you have been to the Hockey Hall of Fame? You better raise your hands if you're not getting any money. Go ahead. Okay. Well, make sure you go there again the next time you're in a tournament. But we'll see what we can do to move this along. Appreciate all of your testimony. Any other questions? Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had a couple of questions. I'm not familiar with the city of Big Lake, and I'm just wondering if you received local government aid.
Mayor?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, we do. Thank you. And then I just had one other question. If you've, I know you have the anticipated costs and revenue. Do you have an anticipated ongoing costs that it would be for the arena?
Mr. Chair, Representative, and it's, you know, just looking at this, the last two pages didn't print out on this, and I'm unsure of why. But we do have, you know, an operating, you know, budget, and with the, I believe that's the question you're trying to answer, mm-hmm. Is it sustainable over the long term? And with the plan that we currently have and the cost of the arena, yes, it is. The arena revenue pays for itself, and there is a little extra for the rainy day fund.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Last night in Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee, we heard a presentation from New Hope for a $6 million Mighty Ducks grant because our committee has the Amateur Sports Commission as part of our account, and the Mighty Ducks grant, which built ice rinks around the state for about 20 years, but has not been funded recently. The proposal was from, like I said, was from New Hope, and Representative Peterson brought the mayor and several people in with the idea that $6 million should be appropriated to that fund because there were enough areas in the state that need new rinks now for it's a new generation of skaters and for girls hockey too, so that they would have ice time during proper hours rather than in the depths of night. Did you think that you might consider Mighty Ducks competitive grant going after that rather than a straight $500,000 request from the state?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy. Yes, we did. At the time, it wasn't funded, and so this is the avenue we took. But we've been informed that we've come before this committee and recognizing your committee as well. We'll meet in the bonding committee, and then if Mighty Duck is funded and some of those things, we'll work that through. But it was the tool, the reasonable one at the time.
And there was, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, there was no particular reason why you went this way rather than that way.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, at the time, Mighty Duck was not funded, and so that is why that language was put in the beginning. But since then, we're perfectly happy, and we have conversations with Ms. Erickson and with the Mighty Ducks and the Amateur Sports Association, and they are aware of this and support us. It's just a matter they could just go ahead and introduce and get us through that process. Either one will work with all to talk to the committee administrators as well and had considered moving that, but they said we'll end up in the same place. And just as long as it's scheduled and comes on through, we will meet there and go through the proper funding.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee here before us, may I suggest that you, when you present to the bonding committee, that you change your home grants that you're receiving. You're calling them legacy grants. May I suggest that you change that legacy term because it's going to get all mixed up in people's minds with the 3A constitutional amendment money, which it does not qualify for. And so we don't want people getting all upset about the constitutional money being spent on hockey.
Okay, good suggestion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Murphy. We'll certainly work on that. I do want to let you know that I do have the sheet here that has the proper last two pages. I don't know what happened either, but we do have them for you. We'll make copies and see to it that they are distributed to you. Mr. Chairman and members, we also passed out some letters from the students today as well that they wrote on the bus down today, and we really appreciate that. And looking for your support. Thank you very much for that, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you very much. Good luck. All
right.
Representative Falk, Hostel 1203.
Oh, excuse me. Remove my motion. Yes. Oh, Representative Obermiller made the motion. Okay, Who made that motion?
Representative Anderson.
That's right. I was thinking ahead on that one. I must have been. Okay, Representative Anderson moves again that House File 1319 be recommended to pass and re-refer to finance and then consequently capital bonding finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. Motion prevails. Now, Representative Falk. House File 1203 and Representative Clark moves that House File 1203 be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance and capital bonding finance. Representative Falk, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. House File 1253, is a bonding request through the Commissioner of Economic Development, and it's for reconstruction of a street, East Pacific Avenue, of the city of Benson. And I do have a preliminary engineering report, which is the document camera here. If it works, I could put it up there. But Benson, Minnesota is a town in western Minnesota which is actually growing. It has a strong manufacturing base with Case Agent manufacturing, ethanol plant, the Fiberman biomass plant. It's a very progressive city, and they're doing many things to really try to keep the community growing. The reason for this request is just the oddity of the way the town's laid out. There's only three means of getting across the railroad tracks, and they're rather close to each other in the middle. So the north and south sides are separated by the railroad tracks, but when there's a train stop in town, you can't get across the tracks, and this creates some problems for emergency services. And so what they're looking to do is to rebuild the road, Pacific Avenue, which is on the southern side of the track, east out of town, and to put to rebuild one of the railroad crossings to help the town be able to grow and to provide basically the required services if they need to get across from the hospital, ambulances, or for school buses, so that the trains going through the town don't impede that. I could show a map, but this is one of those shovel-ready projects
growing.
We're hoping to try to leverage some federal stimulus money with, and that's the reason for bringing it forward.
Representative Falk, what's the total cost of the project?
The total bonding request appropriation is $1,450,456.
And then, but I mean, is there a local money that's already been put into this, or is anticipated to match it?
The reason I don't believe that there is, I don't know if there is a local match, because the property next to it, typically you would go for property taxes, but it's not been developed, and it's less desirable land because of basically the lack of access to the other side of the town. And so trying to get that railroad crossing put in, and it's next to an old abandoned elevator site, and so they really don't have the infrastructure or the businesses next to it to survive or provide the property tax. I believe there normally would be a match as a result of that, or some money. So the town has asked for this. It's one of those shovel-ready projects that they've been doing the work on, and they're trying to see if they can leverage some federal stimulus money.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Representative Lucavino. Representative Poppy asked this question earlier of another community. I think it might be good to know here, too. Does Benson receive LGA?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, Benson does receive LGA money.
And how much?
Representative Fox.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I am not sure of the amount total, but it is it's actually the largest town in my 4.5 counties, population 3,300. So
I've been there, so I know.
Representative Anderson, I believe that Representative Poppy was asking the question because he was worried about the governor cutting LGA and not being able to keep the rink going.
Well, you don't know the reason why I'm asking. I'm just curious.
Well, and I thought that probably was your concern, too. So, Representative Falk, let me give you a tip on this one. Most of the time in capital bonding, when you're there, and we'll move this on, the committee does require like a dollar-for-dollar match from
sure.
the local community.
I will.
So maybe they have done preliminary work in that already, but you should probably check on that.
Right. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I will follow up with the city administrator to ask if they have planned for a dollar-to-dollar match.
Right. Okay. Any other questions then? Then Representative Clark, remove from motion that the House Bill 1203 be recommended to pass. We refer to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Members, before
Thank you.
We get to the Cy Powell bill, and Cy is here, and Representative O'Meal, you don't mind, I think, and Gunther, because Cy isn't on the committee. But anyway, before we do that, we're going to move all those bills last week because we didn't do it when we had the discussion, Representative Anderson. So I'm going to move that to House Bill 147, the Doty bill, 232 Brown, 299 Kalin, 717 Haas, 450 Liebling, 45 Anderson Paul, 457 Olin, and 1109 Eakin be recommended to pass and be referred to finance with a recommendation that it's referred to capital investment.
Any questions? Well, those were the bills we heard last week. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I'm clear. We will be having an opportunity to see those again next year because it's your belief that...
Yes. My belief is that most of these bills will not be in the bonding bill this year, that the bonding bill probably will be a smaller bill, and that most of those higher ed ones will take up most of the money. Although there are other ones that could be added, but they'll be minimal. All those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. That's adopted. Representative Saul.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move this bill.
Representative Mahoney moves the 712. He recommended to pass and re-referred to finance and capital money finance. Representative Paul, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is one of the bill that, a project that was vetoed by the governor last year and was just bringing back up. Many of you guys have toured the hand brewing site. It's the Asian Culture Center. We're asking $9 million. Total project is $18 million. Last time the governor vetoed, at the end it was 5. So,
okay. Any question on this bill, members? We saw this bill, I think, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Those of us on the capital bonding toured the facility. It was kind of unique. It was a cold day, slippery, if I remember right. It's a good project. I'm in the same boat as you. I had a project. I think he just doesn't like short guys. That's what it is. Any questions? Oh, okay then. Representative Mahoney renews his motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Representative Obermuller. House Bill 1243. Representative Obermuller moves House Bill 1243 be recommended to pass. And let's see, where are we going with this?
It is a bonding project.
It is a bonding, too. We recommend the past. We refer to finance and capital bonding finance. Well, Representative O'Meara, welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Your first bill in front of the committee.
In front of this one, but I didn't bring cookies. I recognize Representative Kiffmeyer was bringing hers.
Well, you're on the committee. You don't have to.
Here, but this is the redevelopment grant program the state's been successful with over the past few years, putting some money into redeveloping. I do have... Jenna Rourke of the League of Minnesota Cities with me today will present the content of the bill. Essentially, this is funding that will help put a lot of redevelopment work in progress in our cities and redevelopment authorities that we should try to pass this through and get some money this year.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities. We're the statewide association and are excited to be here in support of this bill today. A lot of you know the redevelopment grant program at DEED has been very successful over the last 10 or 12 years that it's been in existence. This request before you asks for $20 million. I believe $8 million is what came out of the bonding bill last year. One of the new things about this program is just how much it leverages at the local level. The numbers that I got off the department's website showed that there's been something like $35 million awarded over the last 10 or 12 years, which has yielded 670 acres developed, 7,900 jobs created, and 5,200 jobs retained, and another $810 million actually leveraged in private funds. So we just hope you keep this in mind as you move forward with your bonding bill either this year or next year. But this really does leverage quite a bit of money both at the local level in terms of the local contributions and then with private dollars as well. And cities are the only ones who would apply for this money. I know counties, HRAs, EDAs, and those types of developing authorities have been able to access this as well.
Mr. Rourke, you've been around this fund for a while now. Refresh my memory. This was a fund at one time. Was it just for rural Minnesota, and then we changed it to rural and metro? And how much money was put in here a few years ago in a bonding bill?
Well, that's a really good question. And going back to, say, 1998 or 96 when it came about, and I know Terry Coleman's here from the department who could answer some of this, but in short, during the Venturi years, there was an attempt that went through when Ted Mondale was in charge of the Met Council to divide this to have a Greater Minnesota pot that was to be housed at DEED, and they took the Metro money and put that at the Met Council. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that's when Governor Ventura had that little piggy stamp and he used that on some of the money that he'd actually recommended in his bonding recommendations. He turned around and vetoed that later on in the session, which is sort of unique.
And so it became just a rural program at that point.
At that point, it was sort of a rural program, and I think it was 2 years ago or so where we worked with our other partners in city groups and were able to get statewide jurisdiction over this program again. And as usual, there was a little bit of it's always over money, and it's always a sensitive issue, but greater Minnesota cities have always understood that suburbs and the inner cities have redevelopment needs just like they do.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The language that says that one of the priorities is,
the project advances or promotes the green economy as defined in Section 116J. And I think those are the accountability for subsidy development, if I'm not mistaken. So are you adding there the redevelopment project promotes art and culture? What are you thinking there? Is that to make it eligible for some other additional funding?
Mr.
Orr,
yes,
and thank you for pointing that out, Representative Clark. This bill actually comes to you from the Metro Cities, Minnesota Solutions, the League, and I know that the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities had a bill out there as well that Representative Hosh is carrying. There's two different things that we're adding to the criteria portion of this bill, which just make it optional or eligible expenditures for the commissioner to take into account when they're rating these projects. And one of them is adding vehicle miles traveled, which is a phrase that you've seen show up in a lot of different green kinds of bills. And then there was also a suggestion from cities that we add, and you see that on page 2, line 2.6, the project promotes art and culture. I guess this would just make some of those kind of projects eligible for the overall bonding appropriation.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, the key highlight here is that these are the items that will be considered, and so that to put these types of projects into consideration doesn't necessarily mean that they would have to be funded. It would still be within the discretion of the commission.
I'm trying to think about this 1015J. I guess you do not have any requirement to talk about jobs created or paid in under the existing law, do you?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the existing law and the items that are being considered by the commissioner include job creation items from the webpage that the Positively Minnesota webpage does reference that is one of the things that they take into consideration in deciding. The items that are listed here under the one through, which would be 9 when the bill is passed through, relate to the items that they have to take into consideration in order to consider the priority of projects, but not the consideration of whether or not to do a project.
Okay, and Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you look through the past allocations from this program, you'll note that there's 3 significant ones in Duluth, 2 of which I really liked. So, Representative Overmuller, later I'll ask you if you'll allow me to co-author with you. So, thanks.
Well, Mr. Chair, just for one final point there, then on line 1.11, Representative Clark is the reference to the job creation portion of the bill. That's in the current law.
Okay. Further questions? If not, then Representative Obermuller renews his motion at House File. What is the House File? 1243 being recommended to pass and we refer to finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Gunther moves that House File 1335 be recommended to pass and we refer to finance and capital bonding finance. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1335 is a bill from the City of Winnebago and Corn Plus Ethanol Plant that wants to simply do what is right. They want to eliminate some of the controversy of using water and ethanol plants. They want to take the effluent from the city sewage water sewage treatment plant, which is very potable water, pipe it to the ethanol plant, which would use the amount of water used per gallon of ethanol to be less than 2 gallons per gallon of ethanol, which is a third less than fossil fuels. The Cornplus ethanol plant has been a very, very progressive plant in that they have a fluidized bed to get rid of the corn syrup that causes the pollution and odor. They use 52% less natural gas by burning that in a fluidized bed. And they have 2 wind turbines there. In the last couple of years, they've had a hard time making a profit in the ethanol business. They're looking forward to another year of being tough times. So they're asked if the city of Winnebago wants to do this, and they're asking about $250,000 to $300,000. They're going to get the final figures before this thing comes before the bonding committee.
Okay,
I ask answer any questions.
Representative Gunther, so do they reuse this water then out of the sewer system? So basically, one of the big criticisms has been, you know, the one-time usage and discharge.
Yes, they use the water that comes out of sewage treatment system after it's been processed. It is potable water. It's sent through the ethanol plant where it further cleans the water up, and then they discharge it into the river.
Okay. Sounds like a good environmental bill to me. Any other questions? If not, Representative Gunther renews his motion. Bill 1235 be recommended to pass and we refer to finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
It's adopted. Representative Mahoney, do you want to take the mayor to come on your bill and take it next? All right. Or is this, oh, this is your other bill. Oh.
This is a different bill.
Okay, I see this one. Yes. Excuse me. Representative Mahoney moves 1337 be recommended to pass and we refer to finance. And to capital bond finance. Representative Mahoney. You want to do my bill at the same time then?
Probably can.
Representative Mahoney, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, having moved my bill, I would I brought a witness from the Port Authority. I'm Lori Lauder. I will make a brief statement and then turn it over to Ms. Lauder. The 3M redevelopment site is a site, a legacy site for the east side of St. Paul. It is about 50 acres worth of old industrial site right in the middle of my particular part of town. 3M has decided to close that whole facility down, and we're trying to clean it up and get it ready for... the community has had a very lengthy process that they're going through to find out exactly how they want to redevelop that. We have had a wonderful participation, I'd say almost 200, 250 people, everything from helping the homeless to helping the millionaires. So, and we're trying to figure out which is the best way to help the middle class and the east side, and I think we'll get there with this $8 million.
Good. Welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the chief.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lori Lauder. I'm a director at the St. Paul Port Authority. And I'd like to say a few words about the Port Authority. You may all know, or some of you may know, that the Port's mission is, as an economic development agency, to generate business growth, tax base, and job creation and retention. As Representative Mahoney mentioned, this site is an abandoned industrial site. And it is our job at the Port Authority to bring value and to bring growth back into this area. I wanted to paint a larger picture for you because basically this is a very large job creation project. Physically, Mr. Chairman, about a mile west of this map of the 3M campus is 35E. About a mile southwest is downtown St. Paul. And just about a quarter mile to a half mile to the east are another couple of redevelopment sites, brownfield sites that the Port Authority has redeveloped and are ready for business growth and job creation. About another 20 acres or so, the old Globe manufacturing site and the old Griffin Wheelworks site. This site here is about 47 acres in size. In mid-December, the Port Authority purchased the green areas here, 35 acres. And Mr. Chairman, what we are proposing in House File 1337 is to put in some key infrastructure, to add a couple of new streets, put in utilities, infrastructure, and to relocate some utilities as well. It's very important in a large site like this to be able to parcelize the sites, to break up the sites through the use of streets so that businesses will be interested in developing their new facilities and bringing jobs to the site. This proposal here, Mr. Chairman, asks for $8 million. We know that the construction job count would be somewhat over 100 jobs. And after the Port Authority goes through all the other complex redevelopment activities and remediation activities, we believe that at least 600, basically between 600 and 1,000 permanent jobs would be provided. We're looking at light industrial uses on some of these sites. East 7th is here, Mr. Chairman, that leads into downtown, so that along East 7th there may be some commercial and office exposure. So these streets, the new infrastructure and the utility relocation and new utilities are very fundamentally important to make this site be integrated, to provide access from the freeway and from other major streets in the area, to integrate the site finally into the fabric of the neighborhood. So we request your consideration and approval of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lauder, is there any, you know, cleanup work that's required of 3M? Did 3M do anything to clean this up before you're inheriting it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, 3M has done some cleanup. They will do some additional cleanup as well. We have, however, identified some parcels that were contaminated prior to 3M, believe it or not, and so we will take on those abandoned sites to do some of the cleanup there. We expect to use some federal EPA funds on that cleanup.
What has 3M put into the cleanup?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a number off the top of my head, but it was substantial enough so that all of the pollution identified was covered by 3M's assets.
And in the stimulus package, Representative Mahoney, there's some Brownfield money. I remember Deed presented, talked about it last week, so I see Mr. Coleman's here. I don't know if he's in charge of that project or not, but maybe you can check on that for those other sites.
Certainly can, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions, then? Representative Clark.
Yeah, you asked one of my questions. The other one is what are the contaminants that are being cleaned up?
Ms. Lauder?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, I don't know that I'll have the full range, but they include diesel range organics, volatile organic compounds, some petroleum, and DROs, diesel range organics. So there's a whole panoply of different types of contaminants. I must say, being in this business for 30 years and seeing an awful lot of contaminated industrial properties, we expected this site to be dirtier than it was.
If there were any other chemicals that the company itself produced.
3M you're referring to.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it was your statement that you said that 3M is cleaning up everything that they made.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, they are doing that, and that is under the watchful eye of the Pollution Control Agency. They are very good.
Okay. Representative Mahoney then renews his motion. Oh, Representative Gunther, excuse me.
I was just thinking, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Lauder, what did they make at that 3M plant? What did they do there?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gunther, among other things, they had a large tape producing facility, tape manufacturing facility that I believe, in fact, was on site 4 over here. I think they had certain other adhesives that they manufactured, and it was a distribution center as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Representative Mahoney then renews his motion that 1337 be recommended to pass, and we refer to the full finance and then back to capital bonding finance. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Members, Representative Eastman moves the minutes from the Thursday, March 5th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We'll see you on Thursday. Well, I'll take up my bill, I guess, first. Just send me